Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Hey, everybody, it's Mark Pattison, former NFL player, now climbing the seven summits, and welcome to another fantastic episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. Okay, look, 7-8 years ago, I had to step into the fear and put a big-ass goal out there, and so I decided to start climbing all these crazy mountains around the world. It's been an absolute amazing journey. And, you know, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I've actually done 6 of the 7. I've actually been on Denali twice. I've been on climb successfully Kilimanjaro twice. But now it's Mount Everest, the biggest boy on the block, 29,000 plus. And I'm headed over there April 2020. And I'm totally keyed up. And I'm keyed up because I've been doing all this preparation. I train like an absolute bear. And, really putting myself in a position of success. I'm going to be climbing with one of the top climbing outfitters in the world. Excited about that. And just the mountain has fascinated me for years, I'm sure like others, but really excited to do so. And so if I can actually pull this thing off, I'd be the first NFL player to do so. And so as we speak today, there's not that many first in the world. So I look forward to tackling that. Okay, so that's one. Two is I totally appreciate the listen on these different podcasts. I really do. And it's been an amazing journey, as I said, from not just interviewing these people, but being on the other side of the mic and really taking in their incredible stories of doing amazing things. And look, we all need to be inspired. And so if I can help provide and find more people that meet that criteria, all the better. And it just, we all need that motivation, and we all need that those words of encouragement that you can make it back relevant to your own situation and then plow forward in whatever endeavor you are trying to do. Okay, so I appreciate that. And if you want to find out anything that I have going on, you can do so at markpattisonnfl.com. I've got a book out now called Finding Your Summit, go figure. And it is essentially the playbook to what I had learned from my Hall of Fame coaches on how to emerge and do some great things in your life. It doesn't have to be mountain climbing, of course. It can be anything, but it's a plug-in that you take on these different things, these different goals, that these different strategies that I've set forth, that they set forth for me. And good things can come from that. Okay. Also on the website, you can find out more about my expedition. Obviously, I'll be going to Mount Everest, and we'll have more information about that coming up. There's an e-learning course and, of course, the podcast. And when you go to the podcast, you will find an iTunes tab. And I would be so grateful if you go in and you'd rate and review. Now, it all has to do with visibility, popularity of podcasts, because there's so many podcasts out there today that it's so easy to get lost and like, wait, where's Finding Your Summit? And I think I really do believe these stories are really amazing and incredible and can really give a lift to those people who really need it. And even if you don't, we all need to be motivated and inspired by other people to keep going. So if you'd go in and do that, I would be really, really appreciative. Okay, so let's go listen to the pod. It's going to be awesome. Here we go. Hey, everybody. It's Mark Pattison back again with a phenomenal episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And this week, I'm totally jacked up because this is a guy I've been in hot pursuit
for many, many months, and we were finally able to put it together. And that is a guy by the name of Mark Ganey, who is the co-founder of an app that I use all the time called Strava. So first of all, Mark, let me welcome you to the program. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Mark, thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, listen, you know, I mean, we're going to probably bounce all over the board here just a little bit, but, you know, the one thing that I've always wanted to do, and I've started a number of different companies, one was venture-backed and sold, but none of the things I've ever done were necessarily authentic to what my true love, my true passion is. And people, a lot of people who listen to this pod know I'm a mountain climber now, and I once played football many years ago. But I could never figure out how to turn those passions beyond obviously monetizing in the NFL as a player, but turn that into a business. And it's interesting because with my Everest climb coming up and all the other ones I've done in the past and all the training that I do, that thing is literally on twice a day. I punch it. I love seeing the different stats that come. At the end of the month, it tells me I've done, you know, X amount of miles, and it keeps me motivated about what's coming up next. So we'll get into all those things, but I think it's really important to kind of reset things, because one of the words that you used in my research was being really authentic to who you are. And I think that also has an impact upon, you know, where you start, where you grow up. And in your case, I know you're born in Denver, which is a mountainous town, but somehow or another, you ended up moving to Reno. So tell me about life, because all I know about Reno is going through there and hitting like the golden nugget on my way back and forth from California to Seattle.
Yeah, no, and you're not alone. It's not a place a lot of people grow up, but those who do are really lucky. I went out there when I was very young. You're right. Moved from Denver when I was probably three. And my dad's a physician. Ended up out there with a partner to do a doctor's practice. And, you know, Reno's kind of two worlds. There's the world that most people know, which is, you know, the divorce capital of the world and a lot of gaming, a lot of casinos back in the days. But there's this other incredible aspect of Reno. It's a mile high. It's nestled up right against Lake Tahoe. You get phenomenal skiing in the winter. You know, I was half an hour away from a local ski resort. They would literally, they'd shut down first grade every Wednesday at noon and bus us up to the ski resort. That's how I learned how to ski. And, you know, in the summers, my summer jobs were all in Lake Tahoe, pumping gas and, you know, working on boats. You know, by the time I was high school, I was teaching skiing at the local resort. So you're just outdoors, you know, you're enjoying this incredible atmosphere, the mountains and the high desert, and a bunch of good friends that were there who were active. And you're right, that drove a lot of what, here I am now, you know, almost 50 years later, enjoying those same things.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, again, when you start tying all those things together, loving and getting a full appreciation of the outdoors, being so close to so many amazing things. For those who've not been to Lake Tahoe, it's one of the most spectacular lakes, cold too, that I've been to. It's just amazing to be up on top of Heavenly or one of these other resorts where you're looking down onto the lake and it's snow covered all the way through. I mean, it truly is just a magical gem in the middle of the United States, not in the middle, but on the West Coast. So the sports that you played in high school, I know running was near and dear to you. Playing soccer was near and dear to you. Did you play any other kind of sports?
No, not the only other thing that was really formal for me was skiing. I often joke that I run and ride so that I can ski. That's if there's one passion that I've had, that's the one. And so in the winter, that's what we would do. You know, in high school, I was running in the fall and spring, and that was all in preparation to allow me to ski during the winter.
Yeah. So the interesting story out of all this is this all evolves, and, you know, and it's interesting how things that we're affected by and touched as a early youth growing up somewhere, how you're affected by that later in life. And so as things would go, you did extremely well in terms of being and you can give me more description on what race you did, but you ran for your high school and you ended up going to state and you did really well.
Right. Yeah. You know, again, luck is paramount right throughout life. And I got really lucky. There was this team at Reno High School. So Reno High School is where I was. And I just happened to be on a cross country and track team that was phenomenal in that period. This was in the late 80s. So I was on a state championship team for 3 years. And then as luck would have it, my senior year, I happened to win the state championship as an individual. So
in what race?
Cross country. So this was, you know, for cross country in high school, that's 3.1 miles.
Okay.
You know, 5K over trails and through the woods and
pretty much an all out sprint, right?
It felt like it at the time.
Yeah.
And nowadays it definitely feels like a sprint. I can't imagine that I moved that fast.
But, yeah.
It was great. And just great teammates.
Yeah. So then out of the blue, I'm not sure how this all came down, but you get this letter from Harvard of all schools saying, hey, you know, we saw you, we love your results. And would you entertain the idea of coming to our, I'm sure they didn't say this, these are my words, prestigious university and outside of Boston and attending here and running for us.
Yeah. It's, you know, again, this luck theme that I'm on. You're right. A kid who grows up in Reno, Nevada, did not have aspirations to go off to Harvard. That to me, still to this day, just conjures up a bunch of really, really smart people that are off creating cures to cancer and so forth. But coach reached out. He said that he'd seen my results at the state championship and had some decent SAT scores. And had I ever considered it? And it's funny, I go back to my parents, you know, my dad, as I mentioned, who's a physician. He was the key in this whole thing because he said, look, I have no idea if you're going to go there or not, but you're going to do him the honor of just replying back and send the application. That's the least you can do. You owe him that. So I was of the mindset that there's no way I was going to go, but okay, I'll do the right thing. And as luck would have it, I ended up going back and yeah, it was a phenomenal experience.
Yeah, so my sense of time is thrown off just a little bit. Was that pre-internet when you were handwriting this letter, or were you sending him a return email?
Yeah, no. This is all pre-internet. That's right. There's the letter that arrived in the mail, and then a story I've never told, I don't think, is we then had to fill out an application, and this was back in the day where you had to type it all up or fill it out by hand. So
yeah.
I would write the answers to the questions, and then my mom was kind enough to try to type them in while I was off at school. But the great thing about the Harvard application was that she typed the wrong answers to the wrong questions. And I was so cavalier about it. I said, don't worry about it. We'll just use arrows. So we literally just took arrows and pointed, look, this question goes with this answer. This question goes with that one. And we sent it off. We really didn't think anything of it. But maybe that's what got me in. I'm not sure.
Yeah. You know, the cool thing about Harvard, and actually Yale's this way too, it reminds me a little bit of Hogsworth, you know, which is a word, however you say that, you know, it's just very stoic and stone and very classic. And obviously it's been around forever. So you went there and you got in and now you're on campus and you ran all these brilliant people. And the idea was to run for the team. That's what helped you get in. But now you have a stress fracture.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's I did. I went out there my freshman year with a stress fracture that kept me from really running my freshman year. And in the meantime, met up with had a great friend that I made while I was out there who happened to be on the crew team. And he took me down one day. This was actually early sophomore year. Really, I just went down to connect with him. But he also wanted to just introduce me to some really good guys and some of the coaches down there. Not for any reason other than just he was going to show me what a great time he was having. But again, here it is, luck intervenes. I'm sitting in the boathouse waiting for my buddy, and the head of the lightweight program, a guy named Charlie Butt, comes walking up and starts asking me a lot of questions. You know, what am I doing there, and who am I? And then he starts really getting in. He's like, wait, how tall are you? You know, how much do you weigh? What's your athletic background? And a very long story short, I made the move from the cross-country and track team over to the Harvard lightweight program, where I spent 3 years. Again, talk about a life-defining moment, but those next 3 years were critical to everything that's happened since.
Yeah, I would say the same thing about my experience at the University of Washington. And I don't know about you, but certainly what I lacked, I had what I had in talent, I lacked in discipline. And I really didn't understand the work ethic that somebody needs to go through to really attain those highest points in life. And it really... I would say for sure a big time defining moment for myself. So when you talk about lightweight boat, what does that mean?
So you have two classes of varsity rowing at a place like Harvard. There's heavyweights and there's lightweights. Actually, we refer to them as the fat weights. Heavyweight can be any size, any weight in the boat. And if you look at like an Olympic caliber team, these guys they're huge. They're often 6'5", 6'7", 6'8", weigh 250 and can move a boat. A lightweight program, you have to be, no one can be over 160 pounds, and the boat has to average 155. And so it just allows for those of us who aren't massive to go and enjoy the program and enjoy the sport. It's, you know, Olympic sport. You have lightweights and heavyweights in the Olympics. At least you have here over the last 20, 25 years.
So how many guys are in the boat on the lightweight?
You're competing in the spring in typically an 8-man boat with a coxswain. So there's 9 in the boat. There are also 4s that occasionally compete, but the traditional thing that you'll see is the 8s.
Yeah. So as we talked about before, I went to the University of Washington, very strong crew program out there, Boys in the Boat, famous book. Yeah. I know that's dear and dear to you. And I can tell you that we used to have training table in the crew house. And so all the football guys would be there and really driven by the football team, but also the crew guys would be down there and we'd see them come off their crazy workouts during the winter, rainy, stormy, cold, and they'd be jumping in the lake and going out there. But those guys were so well conditioned and disciplined at what their craft was.
Yeah, my degree should say crew. I spent the majority of my waking hours trying to figure out how to spend time in that boathouse with my buddies. And yeah. I think you and I were talking earlier, Mark, you got to love the process.
Yeah.
There's no better example than being on a crew team because we're spending hours upon hours, weeks upon weeks, months upon months to compete in a 6-minute race and maybe have 5 races in the spring that really count. So the amount of time in effort and practice compared to actually racing, the ratio is horrible. But that's not why we did it. You do it because that experience, the esprit de corps that you have with your teammates, the work ethic that you get, the pain and suffering you go through, it's just until you've lived it yourself. And then what you get is this, you get this feeling in the boat that's called swing. And it's a magical moment when you have all 9 who are in a boat synchronized, where you appreciate teamwork like you can't appreciate in any other facet. It's just, I wish I could allow everybody that I know to just experience it once, because once you've had that feeling when that boat is in rhythm and moving in sync, it's just, it's incredible. That's why we do it.
Well, there's really no difference between that and my days on the gridiron playing football. There's obviously 11 guys out there playing at one time. And if to execute and do it the right way, we went to several Rose Bowls. We ended in my last year, ended up in the Orange Bowl, ended up number 2 in the country. And you just need to have all parts firing. And if you don't, bad things happen. And along the way, like you said, there's all these like sub things that you need to do to make sure that is all in sync. Teamwork, grit, going in the right direction, understanding the play, being smart, being conditioned, and all these things, all these little factors and ingredients that come in, you know, ultimately end up in what the end result is going to be. And I think one thing that it was really interesting as I was reading your story, because I relate to a lot of what you went through, is a lot of these, and we'll get into them in a few minutes, but these different companies that you went off to start, you really incorporated, or you try to incorporate, a lot of the teamwork aspect of people coming together in a way that really could, you know, take you guys to much greater heights.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's what I say. When crew impacted me in ways I could never have foreseen, I think it's probably the number one. You know, good things don't happen by yourself. It's so rare that you can be that independent lone player out there and somehow see success. So once you realize that it's all about surrounding yourself with some amazing people who can go get it done, that's where the fun really starts.
Hey, this pod is sponsored by Laird Superfoods. So many products to choose from. From your InstaFuel, your coffee, your tea, your smoothies. And I love the superfood creamer and use the hydration powders like the beets, the coconut, the matcha, the turmeric to mix all into my 7 Summit smoothie. And it's so good. Log on to LairdSuperfood.com and get your 20% off when you use the code MarkP20. Okay? So get your Laird Superfood and I guarantee it will help fuel your journey.
Well, I know that the transition always from college, and especially when you're involved in the sport, in your case, you want to go off and participate in the Olympics, if that was a possibility, but ultimately it wasn't. And it can just be a hard transition because you're used to having this chunk of your life where it was the best time that you've ever had, and you've learned so much, and you've got such a affinity for those guys, the coaches, the races, the hard work, everything that you put in. And now you go out there and you're not part of this team. You're trying to like find your way in life and you're off there firing off your resume to this person and that person and you're getting rejected left and right. So you end up in this private equity company to kind of like earn your stripes. How did that happen and why did you go down that path?
Yeah. So let's see, quick story. So I graduated in 1990. And you're right. My initial intent was to see if I could spend the next few years trying to make the Olympic team. I was not a good rower yet, but I was that strong athlete with a great coach and sort of had the raw material. So that's what I wanted to go do. The unfortunate thing was that I'd had some back problems while rowing at Harvard, and they just got exacerbated that first summer. Some ruptured disc in my lower back just put me on the sidelines and really had me kind of do a sanity check, which was the likelihood that I was going to be able to recover from these back injuries and go and compete at a world level, pretty unlikely. So You're right. I had to change gears. All of a sudden I was this person who graduated from college and had no job. And I was back home in Reno, rehabbing my back, and two parents who were very flexible, but kind of saying, "Hey, we put you through college. Now it's time to suck it up."
Get out there.
And, the resumes went out. I tell you, this is pre-internet. So there were a whole lot of resumes being flown across the country. Not a lot of jobs for me in Reno. I didn't think I was going to go work for a casino. So I needed to look elsewhere. And I got lucky. I got a firm called TA Associates that loved to hire athletes. So I was hired into their Palo Alto office. They hired me to do one job, which is to call companies all day long, try to talk to the founder or CEO, convince them, but introduce them to the firm. And we were an investment firm. We were a firm that liked to invest in successful businesses. And so I would get on the phone and I would introduce them to TA. And then I would spend the rest of my time trying to learn about that business.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me, I don't know if this is where the conversation that you had that was really defining for you, but when you got engaged in a conversation with Jim Gennard, the founder of Oakley.
Yeah, that's a great one. So when you work at TA long enough, they give you a lot of flexibility in who you can call. And so I would call companies that I genuinely was interested in by that time. And one of them was Oakley, the sunglass company. And Jim Gennard was the founder, and he was kind enough to take the call, and not just take it, but he gave me a crash course in entrepreneurship. We not only did we spend that time on the phone, but we went down to meet with him because it's an incredible company. I won't bore you with all the details, but just one of those very special companies where he had taken something from nothing, you know, selling motorcycle hand grips out of a Volkswagen van in the desert to just a world-class company. And in doing that, he gave me a couple lessons. And, you know, one of the basics ones was, look, whatever you're going to go do, it's going to consume you. If you're going to be an entrepreneur, it's going to be 7 days a week, you know, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. It doesn't turn off. So if you're going to do it, you might as well pursue something that you enjoy. And I've always remembered that. And that lesson, along with the lessons from my investors, the guys that I work for, which was, look, go solve real problems and people will listen to you if you're a startup. So I just took those two and tried to marry them. What were problems that I could do as an entrepreneur that related to the things that I enjoyed, which were, as you know, running, biking, skiing, rowing, things like that.
Well, so this next company, I don't know if this is the chronological order of how this all went down, and I'm probably going to hack this up, but Kana, is that how you say that?
Kana.
Kana, yeah. So Kana turns out to be a grand slam, not just a home run or a triple, but at what point in time it had a market cap of $10 billion. So we were talking about enterprise software, right? Yeah. Which to some people that's like bouncing off the walls and that's the most amazing stuff ever. And I'm hearing this whole thing about you and the outdoors and now Strava. So how did you like go down that path? And ultimately you ended up connecting with your business partner the last 25 years who also went to Harvard.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a whole lot there to unravel. Let me see if I can do this quickly. So I decide to leave TA to be an entrepreneur with no set idea, but let's go start something. And that was in late 1995.
It's like the Seinfeld episode. This episode's about nothing, right?
Yes. Yeah. There really was. It was a little bit like, you know, I had a lot of people sort of looking at me with big eyes saying, "What are you doing?" But the thesis was pretty simple, which was I had worked for this firm for 4+ years. I knew in worst case scenario, look, I'll have an interesting story for business school. You know, let's not worry about it. There was, in hindsight, there just wasn't much risk. I didn't have student debt. I didn't have a mortgage to pay. I'd recently been married. You know, Lisa was still, you know, we were both sort of just bug-eyed and innocent, and this will all work. So I left in late 95, and it's important because that was right at the beginnings of the internet. That was, you know, Netscape had just gone public in August of 95, and we were starting to see these names like Yahoo and so forth. And so we were excited about some of those areas. And you're right, I started thinking about problems related to sports. So along with that, I also had this best friend, this gentleman you mentioned. So his name is Michael Horvath. He had been 2 years ahead of me on the crew team. He'd been captain of the team my first year, and we just become close friends. He'd gone off, got his PhD in economics, and was teaching at Stanford. So he was one of my buddies. When I left the firm at T Associates, he was one of those guys who I could just hang out with and frankly, bounce ideas off of. Even though he was working there at Stanford, he was more than happy to host me in his office. And I used to joke that he was the only guy who had a decent internet connection at the time because he worked at Stanford. So that was why I partnered with him. But the truth is, I partnered with him because entrepreneurship can be really lonely. And I wanted a partner in the process, and he was kind enough to take a risk and join me. So that's where that partnership came from. How Kana, it was originally Kana Sports, and we actually had this idea that became Strava. It was this idea of a virtual locker room, and how do we get all of our old buddies that we used to train together, how could we get them to reconnect on the internet? Because we had this void in our life, Mark. We had this thing after graduating where, despite everybody telling you that work can be just as competitive and fulfilling as being on a varsity team, it's complete BS.
It's not.
It's
no.
not.
No.
It's not. I've never to this day have I replicated that experience that I had.
No.
And you know it all too well. So we were looking for a way to do that. And Kana Sports, Kana was the name of my dog. We named it after my dog because that's what Jim Gennard had done at Oakley. He'd named it after his dog. So if it worked for him, it worked for me.
Yeah.
And we went down the path of trying to figure out how to build this virtual locker room in 1995. The good news, that idea ultimately became a really fascinating company that we'll get to called Strava. The bad news was we were way too early. You know, the idea that we could sort of build this place where people would be able to put their workouts when there really was no way to track a workout effectively. There was no way to sort of bring people together. The whole idea of even sharing information was very foreign to most people. But there was a silver lining, which was in the process of just trying to start Kana Sports, you begin this process of talking to people and going out and finding. We needed to find someone to help us build the website. And it happened to be a company down here in the Bay Area that was exclusively building websites for the sporting goods industry. And not only did we hope that they could help us build the website, but we actually hoped that their own clients could become our business partners, because that was sort of the business model was, could we get the Nikes and the Trek bicycles and, you know, K2 skis to somehow sponsor this Kana Sports concept? Well, it turned out that these guys, they had only just jumped onto the internet themselves. Many of them were completely lost. And one of the fascinating things that happened to a lot of these consumer companies, these sports companies, was that for the very first time in their life cycle, they were actually having to deal directly with the consumer. They'd spent decades building product that was then distributed through retailers, through local running stores or you know, bike shops and so forth. And now on the internet, you know, we all find it's much easier to go straight to Nike.com and ask a question than it is to find a retailer. And so they were dealing with this email problem. And Michael and I were, again, pragmatic enough to say, well, the Kana Sports idea, we don't quite have it figured out, but why aren't these guys answering their email? Because they weren't doing it. They were literally spend millions of dollars to build a website, but not spend any time answering the email. And so we pivoted, or we evolved the business, and we started looking at, could we help these guys answer their email? And Mark, you know, luck number 417 in my life was, it turned out that email problem was much bigger than just sporting goods. It turned out that anybody on the internet that was trying to build a real business at some point needed to figure out how to answer their customer email, and Kana had the solution to do that.
That's awesome. So it sounds like it was a combination, you know, the lucky factors in here. Well, you know, so I had a coach, Jim Morris Sr., who was my coach down in New Orleans, and we were on fire. We had won like 10 games in a row, first time ever. And he walked in the room, and he was going to address the team. And he goes, you know, a lot of people are calling us luck. They say it's luck right now that that's all we are. So, but I don't believe that. And I don't believe that because I think it's a combination of preparation meets opportunity. I think it's a combination of we're showing up. We have got the best athletes. We have this, we have that. And yeah, maybe all the stars align for right now is our time. But, and if you want to call that luck, great. But luck is when you win the lotto. But you guys put together, you know, a business plan. You had a certain idea, the direction that you guys want to go down. And then all of a sudden it was like, hey, there's a whole different business problem that you guys had an opportunity to solve. And so you're able to pivot that. whole idea towards something else, which then created this. And then also too, maybe this is luck, that you happen to be in the right place at the right time when the internet was in this boom phase, right? Where everything were like, I don't know what the true value of the company is. Maybe it was that, maybe it was double, but certainly things were inflated in a way that a lot of people got pretty fat overnight because of everybody, you know, the enthusiasm for the stock market and everything else that was going on.
Yeah. No, you know, it's a really good point, Mark. You're triggering something in my mind. People who know me know that I always refer back to what I call the three P's. Yep. The three P's in my life have been patience, persistence, and then perspective.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. If I apply the three P's all the time, luck will happen. Like it'll happen, but you got to be patient and you got to persist. You know, it's just resilience. It's going. And that's, if I'm going to give myself any credit, definitely not the sharpest tool in the shed. You know, I try to surround myself with people who are, but I'm willing to just keep at something, keep going, and be pragmatic enough to know if it's not working, well, let's evolve, let's tack, let's you know, in sailing terms, if the wind has shifted, then all right, then we need to shift as well. And that was the opportunity that happened to us.
It was interesting. Let me just jump in really quick, because a few weeks ago I had Howard Bihar on the pod, and Howard's a 20-year friend. He was a advisory member for a board member for one of my companies. And so just always been a great dude, full of wisdom. And he has this thing called the six P's. And so three of his six are pretty much what you just said. And I can't remember what the other three are right now, but essentially it's just like that willingness to stay at it, to grind, to go day after day, that discipline, everything else that goes with it. And, you know, with that too, sometimes there's casualties, right? And along the way, in terms of the way that you focused on the business, the way that some people come, some people go, investors, friends, employees, you know, relationships, all those kind of things, it can be very demanding when you jump in that lane and you're so driven that no matter what, you're going to get to the end. And I suffer from that same disease. Back in the day when there was 100,000 people playing in the stadium, I was so zeroed in. I felt like I was the only one on the field. And so it made it, I won't say easy, but I didn't hear the crowd. It just, in the process leading up to that, it was, you know, like I have to do blank, 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 and blank in order to get to this place where I want to go to achieve these goals to do. So there are all these dominoes that have to fall. And sometimes part of that, again, involve relationships. Again, the name of this podcast is called Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And I named it that just because that's what I've had to do. And I've had to hit my summit multiple times, and it cost me a marriage. And it sounds like, I don't know if it was this through this time period, but certainly your drive, your vision, your focus has also had some effects on your life and kind of what's happened to you, you know, over time.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. There's different prices you get paid along the way that you just learn to accept with age. And it's funny, Lisa was my wife at the time. We're no longer married, still the very best of friends. And she used to refer to it as Cobb disease. Mark, you've got Cobb disease. And what she was referring to was kind of on the brain. You know, we'd be sitting at dinner across from each other, and she'd be telling me about her day, or she'd be asking me something. And she would just stop mid-sentence and say, what did I just say? And 9 out of 10 times, she'd totally catch me because I didn't hear it. And she was right. I was completely still sort of consumed by something that had happened earlier that day. And it's unfortunately, or better or worse, it's probably now become Sob disease rather than Cobb disease. It's now Strava on the brain.
Yeah.
But so for me, there's been two things. There was a divorce, and we had two incredible guys, Jake and Charlie, who are twins that are now 18 years old, and they're running my life in many ways. And as I mentioned, Lisa and I are the best of friends. We've been divorced, gosh, 15 years. So, you know, we've learned how to raise two boys this way, and it worked really well for us. But you're right, difficult time that happened right as I was leaving Kana. I stayed with Kana until mid-2000. Decided to leave because of family stuff that was happening. We were trying to have the kids at the time. Mm-hmm. And then honestly, Mark, you know, for me, the big issues have been around health, which is another reason why Strava was founded and kind of brought back to life in many ways. Was, I had a bicycle accident in 2002 that cost me 11 surgeries. my kids had health issues early on that we dealt with. Lisa had health issues. We had about a 5-year period there in between leaving Kana and starting Strava, where people have joked that I had a permanent parking spot over at Stanford Medical Center here in Northern California. But you know, the three P's: patience and persistence, and you maintain perspective. You realize that you can make a lot of money with these businesses and have a lot of nice things, but if you don't have your health and you don't keep things in perspective, then it's really not worth it.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with everything you just said in there. And I think that the main key out of all that is just having your eye on the ball on setting something forward so that you have something to look forward to and you can work your way out. And I think too many people fall in that trap, that sinkhole, where they just are sucked in and they can't get themselves out of it. And, you know, it's hard. It's difficult. I went through all these things and just like, when is this stuff going to end? And ultimately, the three P's, you put those in there, you keep grinding away, and you do emerge out of it. But you got to wake up every day with that idea, that positivity, that you can get there, that it is going to happen, and that all things are possible. And right. I think as long as you do that, then, you know, you ultimately will get to that magic spot. And at the same time, you know, you've talked about luck number 473, and then all of a sudden you go into a 5-year drought, and you just got to know that the things that made you lucky, also you put yourself in that position because you did make the choice to run on the team in the cross country team in high school. You could have chosen the wrestle, you could have chosen the football team or something else, but you didn't. You chose a certain thing, just like I chose my football path, right? So it all plays out at the end. So, okay. So now it's 5 years later. Right. And now you're clearing up. You probably got hit on your, it sounds like if you fell, you probably got hit on a 10 speed or something riding. Right.
Yeah. We could spend an entire hour on the nemesis that is the bicycle for me. I it's a love hate relationship. Been put in the hospital twice by cars. Yeah. This one was my own fault. I took a spill that, just cost me a lot of recovery, but yeah, it happens, but we came out of it. You're right.
Yeah. So, but now that you're shifting from the K to the S, and you're now going on to, and this is the reason why I've been in a hot pursuit of you, of trying to get you on the pod, just because of my own selfish interest on, I use this app every single day. I love it. I love what it does. I love how it charts my progress. And then you guys have some different relationships now that you've intertwined that also interact with different apps, which has been amazing. I've got my Garmin watch on as we speak, or Suunto, I should say.
Yeah.
So again, now you're reset, your life is coming back together. And do you go back to your partner and go, look, I think the time is right. The market is caught up. We understand these different things. We understand about the value of social sharing and personal pursuits. How did that all play?
Yeah. You know, Mark, I wish I could say that we had that much foresight. The story as it played out at the beginning was as follows. He and I had both kind of been on similar paths relative to just health issues in the family and different things consuming us. He and I were both sitting on a bunch of boards at the time and kind of frankly feeling bored. I often joke, but I mean it with some sincerity, that sitting on boards is a bit like eating junk food. You know, tastes great in the moment, but not terribly satisfying. It just wasn't the kind of thing that was really getting us fired to wake up in the morning. So we met. He was on the East Coast at the time. He was raising his family in Hanover, New Hampshire. I was still out here in California. We met in the middle of the country. We met in Vail, Colorado for about a 3 or 4 day period. This was August of 2006. And our mission was really straightforward. We want to go start another company. We had a lot of fun with Kana, despite being enterprise software and, you know, maybe sort of boring. The real fun was we got to build a team. We got to compete again. There were just so many great aspects of it. So let's go do it again. And we sat down, and before we ever even brought up our old idea, frankly, what we did was, well, what are all those companies that are out there today that we wish we'd founded? What are the companies that we just admire? And one of the fascinating things was, as much as we're tied to Silicon Valley because of just where I live and having built enterprise software, none of the companies look like the Valley. They were companies that, going back to like Oakley or Patagonia, or Starbucks, or Virgin, you know, they're all these sort of consumer brands that had built sort of a level of trust and almost fanaticism behind them. So first thing for us was, wow, wouldn't that be fun? Forget what we've done in the past. Let's challenge ourselves. And could we go build a consumer business? And then the next thing that we did was we started thinking about problems that were out there. And the irony was for us, that problem around motivation and trying to reconnect with that esprit de corps and just that sense of having fun when you're working out, that was still something that Michael and I were always trying to have happen in our lives. We both enjoy being active. We love to compete, whether it's a local 10K or, you know, a bike race or something, but hard to do when you're raising families. And so could Strava, which means to strive for in Swedish, Michael's Swedish, could that be the solution? Could we use software and technology to do that? So that was one of a couple different ideas that we pursued. It caught some legs. We had some great early guys join us. There's a gentleman named Davey Kitchell who deserves a lot of credit. He was our mad scientist, and he figured out how to use the data coming from these Garmin devices that was unique. You know, people weren't doing the kinds of things that we were able to do with that information in terms of just comparing data against previous rides and so forth. But really humble beginnings. Humble in the sense of, look, if it worked for Michael and I and we're the only two customers, great. Like, it'll keep us motivated. We would have been happy. And also humble beginnings in terms of, we didn't think it would create this massive community, to be honest with you. We were trying to create a product that would meet the needs of a growing population of cyclists that were out there. We picked cycling as sort of our go-to-market target audience. We had visions of serving other athletes, but we were really focused. Could we build a product that, you know, was as important to a cyclist as their bike? And again, you know, we joke about luck and persistence, but you fast forward 10 years later and just a fascinating where Strava's gone.
Yeah. So it looks like the way you guys monetize that is through subscriptions or premium, right? Where you get, there's a free version and there's a paid version.
That's correct. Yeah. That's the large percentage of our revenue comes from that upgrade. So the model is called a freemium model, and you get a lot of features for free on Strava. Yeah. And I love, you know, the fact that, you know, given your podcast focus on summits, our premium product happens to be called Strava Summit. Yep. And it's all about helping someone achieve their goals. So, if, you know, when you're at that place, when you're ready to go after that goal, whatever it is, whether it's climbing Everest or it's doing your first 5K, yeah, there's some great features and services that we build in for people to upgrade to.
That's awesome. So where does the product go from here? And by the way, let me just reset this. So I'm just assuming that everybody on the planet knows what Strava is. So Strava, I'm going to give my words and then please add color to this. So from my perspective, it's an app that you can download onto your iPhone, your Android. And when you're about to set off on an activity, you push a button called start, and then it tracks that activity, whether you're hiking up a mountain, you're walking down the street, you're going for a jog, you're on a bike. And then it shows you your altitude gain. It shows you your distance. It shows you your time. And then once you end that workout, then you hit the end, you know, complete button. And then you can upload, you know, a picture to that particular activity that you just did. And then at the end of the month, or actually you can see exactly what you did because you're actually doing that activity at the time. So you're not staring at your phone. And then at the end of the month, it accumulates all the different mileage or all the different activities that you've done and said, hey, you did this amount of activities and it equaled this amount of hours or miles or something. And it puts it all kind of in the case so you can start comparing yourself from month to month on how you go and the way you want to train.
Yeah, you've nailed 90% of the story. We should bring you in-house and help
there you go.
Help us pitch it. It's at its very basic, we have tried to take tracking to a whole other level. Not so that people can just get obsessed with their data. In fact, one of the things we love to say is you ought to be able to start on your phone or start on your watch and then put it away, right? Yeah. And just go and enjoy whatever activity you're doing. Again, whether it's a climb or it's a day on the ski slopes or it's riding or running. Today, we support, I think, 32 different activities. So, you know, folks who surf with Strava and ski, or they do their Nordic skiing. And you're right, you can have, I would describe Strava in sort of two basic formats. There's just what I call single player mode. If somebody just wants to have that 21st century training log, Strava is ideal for that. You can use it to track all of your activities. You'll see your summary at the end of the month. You'll see how you're trending. We do unique things like matching automatically. If you just go do the same run every day, a lot of people, just, they're creatures of habit. They'll go out and they'll do that same 5-mile loop around their house. Well, the beauty of Strava is that we'll show exactly how you're doing on that 5-mile loop again and again and again, and show how you're trending. So lots of things like that. But there's also multiplayer mode. And that's where it gets fun, because, you know, now we've got a community that's approaching 50 million people worldwide. We're in 186 countries. We add 1 million athletes every month. And so because of that, there's this whole view into Strava where you can actually see how you're doing against your friends. You can, if you go and you've got a favorite climb in your neighborhood that you always run up or ride up, well, on Strava, we'll show how you do on that climb, but we'll also show how all of your friends have ever done. And you can slice it and dice it any way you want. You can follow folks from around the world, right? So I'll, on any given month, actually it was fun. You and I were just talking. We can, I can, in the month of May, I watch, you know, friends climbing Everest, yeah. You know, and sort of seeing that trend or whatever it might be. Right now with the Tour de France that's going on, yeah. It's exciting because we've got about, I think we have almost 80% of the tour riders upload their race every day on Strava, and you can go relive it. So that's the other part of Strava that's really fun that we never could have imagined, which is this this view into the community, this ability to sort of support one another. We call them kudos, right? You can see sort of the equivalent of a virtual high five.
I love getting kudos.
Yeah, it's powerful. You know, it's nice to get them, and it's fun to give them. And so that's the other piece of Strava that we're really proud of, is that we've it's sort of taken on a life of its own. We don't own this thing anymore. It's really the community that's out there, and we're just trying to keep up.
Hey, I'm excited to introduce our new partner of the pod, Cascade Mountain Tech, an outdoor brand from the Pacific Northwest, which is where I'm from, that offers a great selection of trekking poles. They're incredible. Super coolers, camp chairs, LED lighting, and much more. Right now, Cascade Mountain Tech is offering 15% off your first order by using the code FINDINGYOURSUMMIT15, that is, FINDINGYOURSUMMIT15, when you check out at CascadeMountainTech.com.
So you've got this quote, there's a fine line between perfection and disaster. So certainly you're well beyond the line of disaster because you have a company that is actually going, it has its own momentum, and that's so hard to do. You know, the Oakleys, the Starbucks of the world, where you it's you know you're you start a company, you're rolling the rock up the hill, and ultimately when you get to the very top, it starts to teeter down and go down and then pick up momentum like a snowball going down a hill. And that's where you guys are today. Certainly, where do you see this company going in the distance in 5 years, in 10 years? Where do you want this thing to be?
Yeah, so we get excited. I was talking to Michael just the other day, and one of the fun things that that has our energy so high is that we're 10 years in, and yet it feels like, Mark, we're just getting started.
Yeah.
And the reason I can say that is that what we have today that we didn't have 10 years ago are two things. One is just, as I mentioned, this just amazing community. But we're the first to acknowledge Strava isn't for everybody in the world. We're not trying to build out this massive network where everybody should be on there and using Strava every day. In fact, our number one stat that I love to look at is we have this stat where we look at the time in app relative to the time they're working out. And it's really important. So think of this, you know, oftentimes people talk about their technology in terms of they want to know how much time someone is staring at the screen and you know, clicking through and so forth. At Strava, we want to look at the relationship between the time that you're out on your bike or running or swimming or whatever it is you're doing versus in app. Right now, it's about a 50-to-1 ratio. So for every minute you're in Strava, we can tell you that on average, our athletes are spending 50 minutes being active. Yep. We want to keep increasing that, right? So that's our mission. We got this community that's really sort of thriving to just help the rest of the world do that. The other thing that we have, though, today that we didn't have 10 years ago is we have data. We have information. Because we have billions and billions of activities that have been uploaded, and to give you a sense of the scale, it took us 8 years to see our first 1 billion activities on Strava. It took us just another 18 months to see our second 1 billion. It'll take us less than a year to see our third. The reason that that's important to our community is with that information, we can create a whole new level of services that weren't available before. I'll give you one example. You know, imagine, you know, I'm sure you do some traveling, Mark, as I do. If I go and land in a new city, I want to be able to open Strava and I want Strava to say, hey, Mark, we know you love to do that 5-mile run 3 times a week. Here are the great routes that you can do from your hotel that match up with what other people in the area love to do. Here's the local running club in Chicago that everybody loves to join. Here's some upcoming events. I mean, the sky's the limit in terms of our ability to help people discover those things that motivate them. And that to us is, we're just now beginning to unlock this whole idea of what discovery can look like and really where motivation comes from for people.
Yeah. So that's a feature in the future, not a feature that you have today. Is that right?
We have pieces today. You can go on and use things like Explore and so forth. But we think that our ability to make it highly personalized and really understand that relationship between what you're doing versus where you are becomes much better in the future.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's fun.
It's awesome. Yeah. What was your activity today?
Well, it's funny you ask. So twice a week I have this great guy, his name is Michael Granville. He comes over and he puts me through an hour of pain. I am one of those people who will never go to a gym. I'm not good when it comes to weights. I'm this tall, skinny guy. And so Michael is actually, to give him his due justice, Michael still holds this day the high school American record in the 800 meters.
Wow.
He's held it since 1996. It's one of the longest records in high school sports out there. He ran a 146 back in I think he was a senior in high school. Wow. Anyhow, he comes and he punishes me for an hour. So Mark, I've been through a bunch of sit-ups and push-ups and things like that today. And I'll go for a very short, easy run this afternoon. I'm working through some health stuff again. So the doctors have got me, they've got me watching my heart rate a little bit right now, but we're just keeping it mellow and doing things like that.
Yeah. So how does that track? And this is for my own personal use now, which is when you go, like this morning I did a CrossFit, which is pretty much everything you did, right?
Yeah.
It's pull-ups and sit-ups and all that stuff. So when you hit the button start, what is that measuring? Because you're moving, but you're like sitting, right? It's not showing distance or altitude or miles or those things.
No. So there's what we've got today and what we're excited about coming forward. So you're right. This is another good sort of future discussion.
Yeah.
Today it's really basic. So I just happen to have an Apple Watch on. So I just literally launched using the Strava app on the Apple Watch. It was just an indoor workout.
Yeah.
And all it was going to do was just capture a couple things, total time that I was working out, in this case, my heart rate and so forth. And then I went in and I'll add a picture and do some other things so that there's just a flavor for the activity. I find I get more kudos, Mark, if I have a good title to my activity and a decent photo. Nobody looks at my stats. They just want to know what I did there. So that's what I'm able to do. But the really exciting thing, we have this whole initiative inside Strava called Gym and Studio Sync, which is just a fancy name for basically working with tons of partners. We opened up our API about 4 years ago, and we now have almost 40,000 partners today that work directly with Strava. So in the case, for instance, of your CrossFit example, there's some great CrossFit apps that are out there today that do a much better job of tracking the WOD or the workout of the day and the very specific exercises that you'll do. We'll never have the bandwidth to go build a specific CrossFit app.
Yeah.
But our ability to partner with those organizations and with those technologies that then allows them to sync the relevant information into Strava, that's working really well. We've done that with rowing apps, with skiing apps, swimming apps. There's a whole sort of family of different partners now that we work with. And that's how I think we're going to cover some of these activities that aren't core to what Strava's done.
Yeah. Finally, on this, and this is my own personal request to the product department, and that I do a lot of mountain biking. Like I biked the other day 4 miles to the mountain, and then I got my bike, tied it up, and ran up the mountain another 4.5 miles, and then biked back. Right. So this whole bike hike combo, I would like you to put in. You can call it whatever you want, but I'm waiting for that feature.
Yeah, you are not alone. There is not a triathlete in the world who has not emailed us asking us for much better sort of multi-sport tracking. It's tricky, but we're noodling through it. So I can't promise you a deadline. My product guys would kill me, but we're acutely aware. The vast majority of us are multi-sport, whether we're doing it like you, which is pretty hardcore, where you're literally doing it one after the other, or you're switching it up, but there's some relationship you want to have between those. So we're trying to figure out how we capture that the right way.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Okay. So if anybody wants to go on and download the Strava app, it's Strava, correct?
Correct.
Through the Apple Store or wherever you get your downloads, and then use it. It's amazing. And listen, I totally appreciate you being on the pod today. If people want to find more out about you, is the best to go through Strava to follow you there, or are there other places where people can find you?
Yeah, it's that's the best place. Follow me on Strava because that's where you're going to find me posting. I am, despite my kids' feelings to the opposite here, I'm not very good on any of the other social media. So you'll find me on Strava, or you'll just find me at marketstrava.com if you got a question.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, buddy. Listen, so appreciate you being on the pod today, sharing your insights, finding your summit multiple times, being lucky, unlucky, and lucky again. And I really appreciate it.
Mark, pleasure's mine. Anytime.
Yeah. All right. He is Mark Ganey. Thank you.
Hey, thank you so much for dropping in and listening to another amazing episode of Finding Your Summit. Truly incredible people doing spectacular things in life. And I hope you were inspired just like I continue to be. Look, I am super grateful that you came in and subscribed to this pod, and would be more than appreciative if you gave the show a ratings and review on iTunes. Trust me, it matters. And then also go share it with your friends, of course. Okay, until next week, go do something great. And remember, it takes a little more to make a champion. Bye. Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, nfl.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.